U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Supreme Court heads into its final days of the annual term with some surprising rulings that show a divided conservative majority. What we are learning about the new Supreme Court with Justices Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch both on the bench. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal and here to talk about the Supreme Court and its final days of this term are my colleagues, Alicia Finley. Hello, Alicia.
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Strassel. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Paul.
So it's fascinating. We're still awaiting some of the bigger cases of this term on political gerrymanders, on the census question of citizenship, on the Brandenburg Cross in Maryland, and on a major administrative state case, Alicia. But in the two cases that were decided Monday, we learned some things about this conservative majority. In particular, this is not a lockstep majority. Tell us a little bit about what those rulings tell us.
Well, in the first case, Gamble v. U.S., which concerned whether states and whether the Fifth Amendment prohibition on double jeopardy prohibits also states and federal governments from prosecuting an individual for the same offense.
So if you're convicted or if you're acquitted in a federal charge,
regardless, convicted or acquitted, so long as you're charged, then whether the states can also charge you for crime under state law.
Or vice versa.
Exactly.
So the court ruled 7-2 saying that, in fact, you can be charged and prosecuted in both jurisdictions.
Right. This is they basically uphold 170 years of court precedent in this case. It garnered a little more attention when it was heard because this could implicate whether presidential pardons and whether pardons for individuals such as Paul Manafort, whether states could actually prosecute them if they are pardoned. And the answer is yes.
Because Manafort, of course, is convicted under
federal law. Federal law, but
now he's being prosecuted by New York.
Right.
Okay. So that has that political implication. But in terms of the court, it was interesting. That seven justice majority was left and right.
Right. And Neil Gorsuch was one of aligned with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and this is not the first instance where two have been in the dissent together. And they had made a similar argument that state sovereignty and the U.S. sovereignty derived from the people, and therefore that they should not be able to successive prosecutions to achieve in the same successively as they do in one. So a federal government can't prosecute an individual twice. Why should the state be able to basically tag team with the federal government, which would endanger individual liberty?
And so Gorsuch, as an originalist, as he calls himself, and I think it's fair to call him that, would have gone all the way back to the Constitution and to the common law pressed before the Constitution to say, look, the Supreme Court in the 1820s was wrong to do what it did and tolerate double jeopardy because the state under the dual sovereignty, the states and the federal government. And in fact, there should only be one trial one time against any individual, which is fascinating because here you have these originalists on the court disagreeing with one another.
Right, and they both hark also back to the founding period, and they have somewhat, and English common law, compelling arguments and structural arguments that, for instance, the Constitution and the Fifth Amendment was intended to protect individual liberty against government intrusions and government abuses, but this enabling this basically double jeopardy by federal and state governments undermines that purpose.
Kim, I was struck, I don't know if you were in this case, by the fact that Gorsuch Wasn't able to bring Clarence Thomas around, Clarence Thomas being one of the originalists, the originalist originalist. And yet he sided with Samuel Alito's opinion, but not before issuing a concurrence, which was loaded with rhetoric about how we can't be slaves to stare decisis and precedent. It's fascinating. You would have thought with that kind of a concurrence, Thomas would have gone over to the Gorsuch side on his interpretation of double jeopardy.
Yeah, it was almost as if he was giving a nod to Gorsuch, saying, I can't quite go along with this opinion, but you go there. Go, Gorsuch. And I have to say, Gorsuch's dissent was very compelling. And there were certainly a lot of things to think about in there. And I would have thought Thomas might have gone along with it because it involved his dissent. Another thing that I think Thomas has always been known for on the court, which was a kind of rousing defense of individual liberty and the ideas that the founders had vested both the state and the federal government with the sort of charge of protecting individual liberty. But for whatever reason, Thomas did not go there. But it just underlines what you were saying. We've been hearing ever since, especially Kavanaugh was elevated to the high court, that we're now going to have this lockstep conservative majority, and they're going to be, everywhere, every decision is going to be 5-4. And that was definitely not what we got yesterday.
And if this court was going to be excessively political, Alicia, that is, think about narrow political circumstances and implications, as opposed to thinking more broadly and appropriately as they should about the law and the Constitution, you would have said, oh, okay, well, they're going to be worried about Manafort, Paul Manafort, who was the former campaign chairman for Trump, and they'll think about the implications for pardons and for Manafort. This ruling helps Manafort.
not at all. And obviously it wasn't even raised during the oral arguments. And interestingly, the Justice Department came out, was on the same side as the 7 majority in this case. So they believe they want to vindicate their interests and rights just as much as states do in these cases.
Justice Department wants to be able to bring
even if an individual is acquitted of a state crime.
Well, let me ask you then about the Gorsuch opinion, because as Kim says, it's compelling. I found it so. But you side with the majority.
I'm a little more skeptical just by looking at the meaning of offense, which is what this case, I think a lot of the conservatives, Alito, Roberts, Kavanaugh, kind of hinged their decision on. And a hint offense back then, during the founding period, was meant not to indicate a transgression, a conduct, but an actual crime. So I guess it really hinges on how you define offense.
It hinges on more offense or whether or not these sovereigns are truly sovereign, because the founders, as we know, did believe in dual sovereignty, right? The states have their rights and their police powers, and the federal government also has its authorities. And here, the majority opinion here, it basically says the majority can do the states both have the right to bring indictments, and that is a part of the federalist structure.
I think that's right. I mean, this continues the dual sovereignty of the court's jurisprudence on this issue. Ironically, the liberals have not been particularly consistent on this issue because they want to believe that the states have sovereignty in certain instances, but not others.
All right. We're talking about the new Supreme Court, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Jugo with Alicia Finley and Kim Strassel. And we're talking about the Supreme Court and some of its rulings, which are very intriguing about the nature of the new Supreme Court and its thinking. And another opinion Monday, which was striking, it's called Virginia Uranium versus Warren, Kim, and that was a 6-3 majority. Again, a left-right coalition that upheld a Virginia uranium mining ban. This is Neil Gorsuch wrote this majority opinion, but the Chief Justice and Sam Alito and Stephen Breyer in the minority here. How do you look at this case?
Yeah, so this case, as you mentioned, 6-3, Gorsuch wrote the opinion, but he brought along with him Kavanaugh and Thomas, as well as Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And what this dealt with was under federal law, uranium mining practices and processing are governed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And what happened here was Virginia instituted a ban on uranium mining, which it did because it claimed it's an unsafe practice. And they were sued by a uranium mining company or an organization that wanted to engage in that practice, saying that this was a backdoor way of the state attempting to regulate a federal authority, the uranium processing. And the majority found that no, in fact, states have a historic ability to regulate mining activities. It's a very long and old one. And what I thought was very, very intriguing about Gorsuch's opinion, because I think it kind of gets a little bit too to that originalist thinking, is saying that the court here, the Supreme Court, it's not its job to go and see if there is some hidden state legislative intention. It's to look at the clear statutes and the laws.
And the statute allows the state, was just not clear about what the federal authorities were. Therefore, the state has the power to be able to regulate and impose that ban.
Right. I mean, it's always understood that mining states can ban mining. The issue was there are some comments that go back to the 1980s when they were crafting this moratorium, or the Virginia legislature, that suggested they were really trying to regulate the uranium nuclear cycle and the depositors of the fuel of millings and tillings. You get a little bit into the scientific weeds here. That this was, and that the ban on mining was really merely a pretext. The conservatives don't really want to start, or the three conservatives here, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and
Thomas,
don't really want to start divining the motivations behind legislatures, especially because one legislature's statements may not reflect the intents of the entire legislature, as Gorsuch pointed out in his.
Where was the federal government on this? Where did they weigh in on the other side?
Yes, they did. Yeah. Because they have a very they would like federal or they support the federal preemption.
Preemption, yeah, which is really interesting. And you're not surprisingly, they would support federal preemption. But here you have majority of the court going against the Trump administration on this regulatory question and the power of the federal government to preempt state law, standing up for state rights when the statute, federal statute, isn't clear. Now, the implications of this would suggest that the states have authority to do quite a bit when it comes to regulatory decisions, maybe on, say, pipelines that run – oil pipelines that run through the states, for example.
The example that came to my mind was Andrew Cuomo's decision to basically block several pipelines, natural gas pipelines in the state under the pretext of we want to protect our water. Under the Clean Water Act, the state has authority to regulate its waterways and set standards. But the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has authority over pipelines. So you do have a conflict here. And are you going to start reading into the motives of the Andrew governor? No doubt he is just trying to stop fracking and stop natural gas shale. Here, under the court's decision, at least, you know, they gave him the green light to do so.
But as I read this decision, Alicia, what I hear the court saying is a lot of it's going to hang. Maybe the decisive point will be what does the plain language of the statute say?
Right.
And if the statute is clear about the federal responsibility and about federal preemption, then the states are going to be they're not going to have the same running room. It's when there's an ambiguity there or an absence of a statement about – a clear statement about the federal law, that's when the states will prevail.
Right. Well, in this case, it was like mining really was not
– even mentioned.
Mentioned.
Right.
Exactly. And in the, I think Gorsuch, that's how he tries to delineate between another case in California and the PG&E and trying to ban nuclear or stop a nuclear power plant, which was clearly covered by the statute. And it, so this actually, again, raises the issue of federal preemption. And there's an interesting case that the court basically punted on earlier this year involving federal preemption and the impossibility doctrine because the court's jurisprudence has basically been all over the place, and they're eventually going to have to clarify it.
So, Kim, as you take a look at these cases and indeed this whole first term with Kavanaugh and Gorsuch on the bench, what do you think we're learning about the nature of this new conservative majority and how it's I mean, obviously it's early days, but what are we learning about how they think about the law?
Well, we are certainly learning that the liberal mantra that we heard in this liberal conceit that this was going to be a court, again, that was 5-4 in all of its decisions, pro-Trump administration, pro-corporate America, obviously was not a very nuanced view of how the court was going to roll out. And you know, I think for those of us who were evaluating both the Gorsuch nominations and the Kavanaugh nominations, that was obvious to some of us who had read those opinions and knew those two men's backgrounds, that what mattered here was that they were very bright, very capable, and clearly good additions to the court, but they were not necessarily uniform in all of their views or in the way that they look at the law. So there's that. And then also, you know, the conceit that we've shared that, again, the pro-corporate and pro-Trump administration, the decisions that were issued yesterday, especially the one we were just discussing, that was definitely the one where the court ruled in opposition to the way that the administration had come out and ruled against a uranium private interest, you know, which is a sort of corporate American interest that we're routinely hearing the left claim as the high court just exists to give them a helping hand.
Another case that came down Monday, Alicia, which is also interesting, was on the First Amendment. And the conservative majority in the Supreme Court has been really strongly in defense of the First Amendment and the right to free speech. And yet in this case, a 5-4 conservative majority said that a private interest, in this case it was, I think, the Manhattan Community Broadcast operation, was able, in fact, to block some speech because it's not a government entity.
Right. Just because it has a government contract or a government license does not mean it's actually acting on behalf of the state, which is essentially what the liberals try to argue, is that they have a public franchise, or the in this case, Time Warner, the cable company, has a public franchise. And therefore, any channel that therefore makes use of these public airwaves must also abide by the First Amendment.
And the court basically said, the conservatives said, no, the First Amendment is intended to constrain the government, expressly the government. And you have to have a strong government interest involved in this. Otherwise, the private actor, like a private company, can say, as Dow Jones can say, you know, Finley, sorry, you can't say that on our premises. Get off, right? And you're not protected by the First Amendment because they have the right to police their own workforce. So this is an interest. I mean, it's really not a contradiction from the First Amendment jurisprudence that this court has become so well known for. But it is interesting that and this has implications for Facebook and how they treat free speech, among other companies.
Right.
Well, although interestingly, Kavanaugh wrote that decision, and he expressly said, don't read this too broadly. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be the court saying, you know, I know all of you are going to jump to the conclusion that this is now can now be transferred over and applied to Twitter and other social media, but we haven't, we, the court, have not, in fact, got there yet.
Well, and that's I think, shrewd and wise, given the fact that you don't want too broad a brush on some of these decisions. You never know what circumstances are going to arise regarding some of these other cases. Now, we do have yet to be heard some of these big cases I mentioned earlier, including the census case. And here's a prediction. If it does come down 5-4 for the administration, the hue and cry will be lockstep conservatives side with Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So here's an interesting statistic. So far in the term, the liberals have been in the majority in more 5-4 decisions than the conservatives, because one conservative, with the exception of Alito, has gone along with the liberals.
In different
5-4 cases. And actually, Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch have been in the minority or the most.
Been in the minority the most. Okay. So Kavanaugh and Roberts in particular have paired up on a number of cases to
And Breyer has as well gone along with them to try to form a more centrist bloc, I guess.
And will the left give the conservatives any credit here, Kim?
Of course not. They're never going to get any credit, especially because, as you just mentioned, we still have actually a somewhat striking 20 cases that need to be issued in the remaining, what is it, less than 2 weeks
and a half
now,
yeah.
Before the court is done. And some of these big blockbuster ones. And as you mentioned, if there ends up being a 5-4 majority and a conservative majority on those big cases, there's the census case, there's a gerrymandering case, there's the Brandenburg Cross case, as you mentioned, then all of this and all of those statistics that Alicia just cited will go out of the window, and they will just be tarred and feathered as, you know, being in the pocket of the Trump administration and conservative interests.
Got a prediction, Alicia, on the census case?
I really hope they come out with it on Thursday so the liberals start off the whole they'll start howling at that point. But I do think it's going to be a 5-4, and they've been spending the last few weeks trying to intimidate Justice Roberts into either punting on it or to siding with the liberals.
And when you say 5-4, this would be with the
5-4 in favor of allowing the Commerce Secretary to put the citizenship question on the census.
All right, you heard it here first. Finley's got the call. All right, thank you, Alicia. Thank you, Kim. Thanks you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.